Avos Perk Base, Mishnah Ches, 2:8, or in some versions 2:7. We still have Hillel here for one more Mishnah, and Hillel's basic point is that although it's been said in modern times you can't be too rich or too thin or too well-dressed, wrong, says Hillel, you really can't have too much of a good thing, at least when it comes to things that are of the physical world. You definitely can have too much of a good thing. When it comes to ruchni matters, however, the more the merrier. So the Mishnah says inside very specifically, Hu haya omer, he used to say, marbe basar marbe rima, more flesh, the more maggots. So the idea here is that a person might eat and drink and be merry and make himself nice and fat, and you might even think that's good for you because you'll be fattened up. That means you're like in strong and resilient. Wrong. First of all, it doesn't do any good in this world, says Hillel. Nothing wrong with eating, drinking. You can even be merry. That's all great. But to an excess, it doesn't do any good. In fact, many Rishonim point out that being fat causes a host of medical ailments. Not good for you at all. Does you no good. And ultimately, all it means is that you'll have, you know, more flesh for the maggots, the worms to eat when you're dead in the grave. And the Mefarshim, Bartan, and others speak out how Chazal say that the rima, the maggots that eat the body's decomposes, is painful to the person who's died, like little needles are to the flesh of a living person. So nothing good comes of it. Therefore, eat as much as you need, but in moderation. Again, we're calling back the Derech Yishara, the straight, narrow path we talked about before, at least according to Rambam, Bartanur, etc. Second of all, he says, marbe nechasim marbe daga, more property, more assets, means more to worry about. Again, nothing wrong with having what you need. Being well off is just fine. But a person is fooling himself if he thinks that, you know, if he had enough, all of a sudden now he'll feel safe and secure. To the contrary, once a person has more than he needs, the next thing you know, people say, oh, he has plenty, and they either want to confiscate it from him, or steal it from him, or he's got the burden of figuring out where to invest it, or making sure that it doesn't go to waste, or how to deal with all the different problems that all the different properties he has around the world is causing him and the like. Bottom line is, the difference between a guy worth $10 million, $100 million, and $1 billion is just each one has more to worry about regarding where his stuff is and what to do with it and who's taking it and how to deal with tax planning and all the rest of it. Again, therefore, nothing wrong with having what you need, but don't kid yourself and think you'll be safe and secure with more stuff. It's not true. Just causes trouble. Third of all, marbe nashim, marbe kshafim. The more wives, the more witchcraft. So here the idea is that according to Torah, a person may marry more than one wife, and nothing wrong with having a wife, but more wives don't mean better lives. You might think, you know, it's more to brag about. You got two wives or three wives. Of course, Ashkenazim and really everybody pretty much today don't allow for more than one wife, but the Torah does. Nevertheless, don't kid yourself and think, you know, more is better. The Marba Kshafim, more witchcraft, means there's an Isser from the Torah, one of the 613, that you can't even let a mechashefa live, a sorceress. And the truth is that it's true for a sorcerer, or a witch, or a man-witch, a warlock, it's all the same. The Torah focuses on women because it seems that women have more of a propensity to go for this than men, for whatever reasons. Maybe the reason why is because women, at least certainly in yesteryear, in the time of the Mishnah, had they were like the oppressed, you know, majority. They didn't have power of their own necessarily as much as men, and therefore, if they wanted to get things done, they wanted to, you know, spite their tzara, their co-wife, or they wanted to work out a way that they can have more time with their husband and like, they would, you know, jinx them with some kind of, you know, occult activity. And therefore, the point of the mission here is that you're bringing kshafim into your house, you're bringing all this kind of forbidden occult activity, and therefore, more wives, not a better life by any means. Next, he says, marba shfachos, marba zima. More, a shifcha is a female maid servant, but she's actually like a shifcha kanana. She's like an evet, she's an owned slave. So in the time of Chazal, many people, I don't know if most, but many people had slaves. It was like house help was very, and whatever, all sorts of labor. Very common. It's a discussion, not for now, if the Torah, how the Torah relates to slavery. In general, the consensus is it's not giving a very positive eye towards it, but it doesn't forbid it. So sort of a status symbol and a way to make, you know, all your wives' lives much easier would be to have shvachot, have, you know, lots of an army of maids who would be taking care of everything. So you might think that makes things better, but it makes things worse. As much as mar bezima, it brings more. Zima is like lewdness, impropriety. You know, those girls and dandiru, but they chase after the boys. So the next thing you know is in your household, you know, all sorts of mischief is going on. And therefore, the Mishnah's point is here, it sounds like a nice idea to have a whole staff of people to help your house run, but it'll bring other problems as well, specifically here, zima, you know, impropriety amongst the boys and girls. There is a secondary pshat, if you will, and that's an additional angle of this, aspect of this, which is that a person himself get dragged in, having too many maid servants, you know, women, maids living in his house, can lead to problems with him as well. Finally, marba avadim, marba gazel. Having more slaves, meaning these are man servants, or men who are owned as to be household help and the like, that increases gezel. Gezel is theft, right? So Chazal say that Kanaan, who was the father of the avadim, he basically told his children to love zima and gezel, immorality and thievery, like you have in today's, you know, gangs and, I don't know, mafiosos and the like. So the idea here again is that it might sound like a great idea to have this massive estate with all these, you know, slave hands, let you, you know, pick all your bales of cotton, whatever you're doing over there. But the point is, they're going to have other knock-on effects, which are going to be, you know, negative to the neighborhood, to the well-being of your household, maybe even to yourself, drag you into sort of impropriety, in terms of financial impropriety. So again, the idea is, it sounds like a great thing to have this whole army of people, but actually causes other kinds of problems as well. So you really can't have too much of a good thing. Now, the Bartanura learns this is actually like a progression, something along the lines of how we, the modern expression, lifestyle creep, if you know the expression. The idea is that, you know, a person starts out and he gets used to just being basically a glutton, you know, eating and drinking to excess, and then he gets a taste of the so-called good life, and then he needs to figure out how to support that, so now he wants to become rich. Hence, he goes from the marba basar to the marba nechasim, and the more property. Then he becomes rich, so of course, the halacha is you can have more than one wife, but only if you can afford it. All the women now come in the time of the Mishnah for sure. You know, women didn't work generally. They were supported by their husbands. Rich man attracts wives. So now the guy's going to be able to flaunt the fact that he has lots of wives, kind of like you have in primitive societies today as well. So there you go. Now the women are coming, and then the women are going to say, listen, they don't want to do all this work. The house is big. They need help. Then you're bringing in the maid servants that and the so they can have an easy life. That brings more problems. And the same goes with the slaves as well. So the idea is that one thing leads to another, and once you get sucked into the path of material indulgence, it just gets, you know, worse and worse and worse. You spend your life, you know, dealing with all your material problems, and before you know it, you've spent a lifetime taking care of your body and not your soul. In contrast, says Hillel, marba Torah, marba chaim. If a person invests, the more time he invests into his Torah, into his study, so marba chaim, the more life he has. Meforshim speak out both life here means actually kind of like a long life in this world, even kihu chayecha v'orech yamecha, says the pasuk, and also life in the hereafter, in olam haba, olam. So life Torah is good. The more, the better. Same goes for marba yeshiva. If you're already a chacham, you're sitting, you know, you're having students. The more students you have sit before you, the better off you are. Marba chachma makes you wiser. The idea here, basic idea here, is that when you have more students, they're going to ask you more questions, you're going to get things more clear, and by facilitating more students interacting with you, they'll get smarter because you're teaching them, but also you'll get smarter because of them. They'll ask you great questions and sharpen you up and make you see things from different perspectives, and then for everyone's a winner. So therefore, the more students, the better. That's how they understand yeshiva. Many learn yeshiva. Marba etza, marba tevuna. The more advice you get, the more you ask other people for their insights into life, marba tevuna, the more you'll understand. Again, personally, only as his life's experiences, but you're kind of foolish if you learn from your own mistakes. You can learn from other people's mistakes, so get them to give you advice as well. And don't be afraid of that. The more people you ask, the more insight you get into living successfully and the like, then the smarter you'll be. So therefore, marba etza, don't hesitate. Marba tevuna, you'll have more and more understanding of the world around you. Marba tzedakah, marba shalom. If a person gives, the more tzedakah he gives, the more, I'll translate as charity now for lack of a better translation, he gives, so then the more shalom, the more peace he'll have in his world and in his life. For Sadr, just the most basic level, people will like him more, so he'll be more respected and have less, you know, the people who are around him will be less, you know, more prone to give him a, not give him a headache. But more than that, obviously, society has a host of ills. When people are needy, it makes everyone, puts a strain on the system, makes people sad, makes people desperate, makes people do things they shouldn't otherwise, they wouldn't otherwise do. So by ensuring that there's tzedakah in place, people are protected, there's a safety net. Nowadays we have like almost a government safety net sometimes, but the point is you have a lot of crime that happens out of desperation. If you have tzedakah in place and a system for the community whereby people aren't desperate, then you have much more peace and prosperity, and therefore, of course, much more shalom. So good for the community and good for you. Finally, he says, "Kana shem tov kana l'atzmo." If a person acquires a good name, he acquires it for himself. This, the idea here, it's like a little different, I think. It's saying that when you acquire other things in the physical world, so it's only yours, you know, perhaps temporarily. There's a midrash that points out how all the words for like money, like the word zuz, means to move, to go away. All they imply that because the easy come, easy go. And that's true with everything. You know, everyone fortunes are, you know, made and lost all the time. People are rich and poor. So even though you have something today, tomorrow you could lose it. It could get broken. It could get stolen. You could fall on hard times. So what's yours isn't really necessarily yours. But not true when it comes to your reputation. Shem tov, the way people think about you, your integrity. So if you've acquired that, you've acquired a good name for yourself, then kana l'atzmo, it's yours for keeps no matter what. Because no matter what, no one can take that from you. You will always be the person of sterling character, person of respect, worthy of respect, and no one can take that from you, whatever happens. So if you have to, you know, grab your bags and run for it, when you go to a new place, you'll still have that same shem tov in place, unlike the stuff you have to leave behind. And finally, kana lo divrei Torah, kana lo chai olam haba. If you've acquired divrei Torah, words of Torah, you've integrated Torah into yourself, then you've acquired for yourself a life in the hereafter, chai olam haba, life in the world to come. There's a very famous, I think, story told of the fellow who went to the Kotzker Rebbe and said, you know, Rebbe, I've learned half of Shas, or I've learned Shas 10 times, whatever the version of the story is. And the Rebbe says, well, I'm glad that you've gone through Shas, but how much of Shas has gone through you? And that's the idea here, that Shas, the Torah, is meant to make an impression on a person. It's meant to be, it builds him up and his soul up and his person up, and therefore we want to say, if you've acquired that, and it's yours for keeping, so that will be your ticket in Olam Haba. No one can take that away from you. You've got an astounding Olam Haba because of the Torah you've acquired for yourself, that you own, that you've earned by your own doing.